The Drifters left the Stage Line headquarters, walking quickly along the darkened street toward the main part of the settlement and Sharky's saloon.
You know, I'm starting to think that this whole family attracts trouble just like we do, Bo.
Beginning to look like it.
Bo hoped that they reached the saloon before Dave got himself into too big of a mess. That hope appeared to be dashed, though. Bo and Scratch broke into a run that carried them quickly to the saloon. Bo was first through the door, slapping the bat wings aside. Scratch was right behind him. Bo went right, Scratch went left, putting some distance between them in case they were running into a gunfight. But there were no more shots. Dave Sutherland stood with his back to the Texans, stiff and straight. He had a gun in his hand, and it was leveled at two men, also with weapons drawn, and pointed at Dave. Everybody else in the saloon had cleared out from around them. And the bartender, Claremont, was hunkered behind the bar, peeking over the hardwood with wide, frightened eyes. Dave didn't turn around when Bo and Scratch burst into the saloon. He couldn't afford to take his eyes off the men he was facing. If he did, they would probably open fire on him again, and this time they'd be likely to ventilate him. Nobody was lying dead in the sawdust, and it even appeared that no blood had been spilled. Bo and Scratch knew what had happened here almost immediately. When angry men who had been drinking slapped leather, it wasn't uncommon for all the shots to miss their targets. Powder could be burned and lead flung, but nobody was hit because of poor, hurried aim and whiskey-blurred vision. The men facing Dave were two of the hard cases who had been with Jared Rutledge the night before, Bo and Scratch realized. There was no telling what had started the fight, but likely it had something to do with the hostility between Rutledge and Abigail Sutherland, although the Texans were a little surprised that Dave would take up for his mother. So far, he hadn't really seemed to care all that much about his family. What was important now was defusing the situation before somebody was hurt or killed.
Why don't you fellas all put those guns down? There's been enough shooting.
Get out of here, Creel. This is my business.
Not hardly, it ain't. We work for your ma, and we don't want to see her crying over your hide when it's got three or four bullet holes in it.
You old codgers, get out of here. This is between us and the kid.
If you figure on dealing again, we'll be taking a hand in the game.
The tension in the saloon stretched until it felt like something was about to snap. Bo and Scratch had experienced that sensation many times before. It was usually followed by the roar of guns. This time, though, the moment was broken by the arrival of Marshal Tom Harding, who shouldered through the bat wings with a shotgun in his hands.
All right, damn it, everybody freeze!
Nobody's moving, Marshal.
You know what I mean. Dave, put that gun down. Hitchens, Raleigh, you too. I'll throw the whole lot of you in jail if you don't holster those irons.
Slowly, Rutledge's men began to lower their weapons. Dave followed suit, but not until the other two men had moved first. Bo and Scratch relaxed a little, but remained watchful. Rutledge's gunnies might be trying to pull some sort of trick. That wasn't the case. They actually holstered their guns, and so did Dave. Marshal Harding circled around to the side so that he could cover all three of them easier.
All right, what happened here? I heard shots.
That kid's crazy. He came in here on the prod and started in on Raleigh and me.
That's not true. I just wanted to have a drink in peace. They're the ones who picked the fight.
This is getting to be a habit, and I don't like it. And I should have known you two would be mixed up in it, too.
We didn't get here until after the shooting started, Marshal. We came in and found the three of them holding guns on each other.
Yeah, it looked like they did some blazing away at each other, but they didn't hit much anything.
That's not true. A couple of bottles of good whiskey got broken, and there's a hole in the front wall. It's just luck the window didn't get busted.
Now that Claremont mentioned it, the smell of spilled rot gut was indeed a little stronger than usual. Bo hadn't noticed it at first because of the tang of gunpowder in the air.
Are you telling a straight story this time, Claremont?
I sure am.
Who started the fight?
I couldn't tell you that. I was down at the other end of the bar. All I know is that all three of them were jawing away at each other and getting pretty loud about it. Then, before you know, they were grabbing for their guns, and everybody else scattered and hunted for some cover. I got down behind the bar myself.
What was the fight about?
What's it always about? The Sutherlands just don't get along with Mr. Rutledge and his men. I don't reckon Dave's any different from the rest of the family.
All right, I've heard enough. Creel, Morton, take their guns.
What?
You heard me. Get their guns while I cover them. All three of them are going to spend the night in jail for disturbing the peace and discharging a firearm in town.
Marshal, we're not your deputies.
I know that, damn it. But I got a right to ask the citizens for assistance in performing my duties as a lawman, don't I? Now get the blasted guns.
Nobody takes my gun.
Well, then I'll just blow you in half instead. Raleigh's standing close enough to you that the buckshot will probably kill him too, or at least hurt him mighty bad. But it's your decision, Hitchens.
For God's sake, Hitch, turn over your gun, man.
Well,
all right.
Give me your gun, Dave.
Take it.
Bo plucked the revolver from its holster. Meanwhile, Scratch had advanced to disarm Hitchens and Raleigh, watching the two hard cases very closely as he did so, just in case either of them tried to make some grandstand play. Neither of them wanted to attempt that with Marshall Harding's shotgun covering them, however, so Scratch was able to take their guns without any trouble. When the three men were disarmed, Harding motioned with the greener again.
Head down to the jail. If you try to make a break for it, I'll drop you, sure as hell. Creel, Morton, you come along too, and bring those guns.
Dave led the procession out of the saloon and down the street toward the squat adobe building that housed the marshal's office and a small cell block in the rear. Hitchens and Raleigh came next, then Harding, and finally Bo and Scratch. Men who had been in the saloon for the futile gunfight came out onto the boardwalk to watch the prisoners being taken to jail. The few other pedestrians, who were still out and about at this hour, paused to watch the little parade too. The jail had only two cells that faced each other across a short corridor. A stout wooden door with a small barred window in it separated the cell block from Harding's office. The marshal put Dave Sutherland in the right-hand cell, Hitchens and Raleigh in the one to the left.
You gonna keep us in here all night?
Damn right I am.
There's only one bunk in this cell.
You can flip a coin to see who gets it and who gets the floor. Now settle down. You cause a ruckus back here, I'll get a bucket of water and throw it on you, just like I would a dog that won't behave.
Bo and Scratch watched the exchange from the doorway between the office and the cell block, then stepped back as Harding emerged from the corridor, the shotgun tucked under his arm now. Harding closed and locked the door, then put the shotgun in the wall rack. He turned to Bo and Scratch, gave them a curt nod, and sat down behind the desk.
I'm obliged to you for your help. Just put those guns you took away from them on the desk. I'll give them back in the morning when I let those boys out.
Might be a good idea to release them at different times.
You don't need to tell me how to do my job, Creel. I've been a marshal here for 8 years. I know what I'm doing. I thought I'd probably let Dave go first. Somebody ought to be here to take him down to his ma's place and make sure he gets there all right. His brother, maybe.
We haven't been around here for long, but I can't see Gil doing that. I'm not sure he cares what happens to Dave.
What time you planning to let him go? We'll be here when you do.
That's all right with me. Around 8 o'clock, I guess.
Does the fact that you're releasing Dave first mean that you think he wasn't to blame for what happened tonight?
Not necessarily. But in my experience, Dave isn't likely to start a fight when he's by himself. It's different when Angus and Cully are with him. They're troublemakers from way back. No, I figure Hitchens and Raleigh started in on him, just like Langdon, Sims, and Bartlett did with you fellas last night. Rutledge's men are always looking for some way to get at the Sutherlands, short of open war.
It may come to that.
I know, now that you two have signed on with the Sutherlands. Before you came to Red Butte, Abigail didn't really have any way to fight back. Gil's no gunfighter, and neither is Dave. Ponderosa Pine has plenty of sand, but he's old.
Well, so are we.
Yeah, there's a difference, and you know it.
We'll be here at 8 o'clock in the morning to take charge of Dave, if he'll let us.
Fine.
The Texans turned toward the door of the office, which opened at that moment to let Jared Rutledge stalk in.
I hear you've got two of my men locked up, Marshal.
That's right. Hitchens and Raleigh are back there in the cell block, charged with disturbing the peace and firing off their guns.
I'll pay whatever fines are against them.
There ain't any fines against them. They're spending the night behind bars, that's it.
Well, they were supposed to take a freight wagon to Cottonwood for me tomorrow morning.
Well, they'll be released from custody at 9 o'clock. What they do after that is none of my business, as long as they don't break the law again.
I'm not sure they'll feel like making that trip after spending the night in jail.
Send somebody else, then. That's your lookout, Mr. Rutledge, not mine.
Damn it! I'm short-handed already because of what these two drifters did last night, and you didn't lock them up!
They didn't try to shoot up Sharky's place.
What about Dave Sutherland? I'm told that he was there, too, and that he started the fight.
I don't know who started it, but Dave was part of it, so he's locked up for the night, too. I try to be fair in enforcing the law.
9 o'clock?
That's right.
I'll be here to see that it's not a minute after.
You do that, Mr. Rutledge.
You're coming pretty close to making an enemy of that man, Marshal.
I know it. I don't like it, but I can't help it either. I swore to uphold the law and keep the peace here in town. Rutledge is the one who keeps pushing.
Maybe so, but if it comes to a showdown, who will the citizens support? You or the man who brings in all their supplies?
I hope I never have to find out.
Ponderosa was waiting on the front porch of the stage line headquarters when Bo and Scratch got back there a short time later. He came down the steps to meet them.
I heard shooting a while ago. Where's Dave?
In jail.
But he's all right. He and a couple of Rutledge's men got in a fight, but no one was hurt. Marshal Hardin locked all of them up for the night.
Now, who'd the boy tangle with?
Some fellas named Hitchens and Rawley.
Dave's mighty lucky not to be dead. Those two were fast on the draw.
Well, now, fast ain't the same as good. It don't matter how quick you can get your gun out if you can't hit what you're shooting at.
They'd all been drinking, too. Still, I agree with you, Ponderosa. Dave's lucky.
But his luck may not last if he keeps on getting into trouble.
Yeah, I know. Guess I better go in and tell Miss Abigail what happened. She's already a heap worried.
I thought you weren't going to say anything to her.
I couldn't help it. She heard Doc Chambers talking and wanted to know what he was doing here at this time of night. And I never have been able to lie to a woman, especially that one.
What about Gil? Does he know?
He came in and heard about it, too.
But he didn't come to find out what happened to Dave.
Nope, he sure didn't. And Dave's all right, Miss Abigail. He got in a ruckus with a couple of Rutledge's men, but nobody was hurt. The marshal locked them all up, though.
Dave is in jail?
That's right, ma'am.
Oh, I should go see him.
Now, there's no need for that, Miss Abigail. Bo and me were just there. He's fine. He was stretched out on the bunk in one of his cells, probably asleep by now.
Because he'd been drinking again.
Well, they all had been. That probably helped start the fight.
It would have happened anyway. Bad luck has been following this family around ever since my husband got sick and died.
Oh, now, Miss Abigail, there ain't no need to carry on so. Your family ain't jinxed. Everybody runs into a string of bad luck now and then. I'll bet yours is just about over.
I'd like to think that Bo and me changed your luck for the better when we rode in, ma'am.
I'd like to think so, too, Scratch. But so far, things haven't worked out that way, have they?
Give it time, ma'am. Scratch and I told Marshal Hardin that we'd be at the jail in the morning when Dave is released. We'll have a talk with him and bring him back here.
Well, I don't think talking will do any good, but I'll appreciate the effort anyway, Bo. Now, if you'll excuse me, I think I'll turn in. It's been a long, trying day, as usual.
After Abigail retreated to the family's living quarters, Bo, Scratch, and Ponderosa went to the barn.
Are you really gonna have a talk with Dave?
I plan to try to. Somebody needs to talk some sense into him.
Huh. Better take a 2x4 with you.
Why?
Because that boy is just like a mule. You'll have to whack him in the head with it a few times just to get him to pay any attention to you.
Despite Ponderosa's advice, neither Bo nor Scratch was carrying a 2x4 when they walked down the street to the marshal's office the next morning. They'd had breakfast at the stagecoach station a short time earlier. Abigail was still upset and worried, but she had her emotions under better control than they had been the night before. Gil was flatly dismissive of his brother's problems and said Dave could rot in jail for all he cared.
If you ask me, Gil needs that wallop upside the head just as much as Dave does.
Yeah, Abigail's got her hands full with those two. When I stop and think about it, though, some of the worst fights I've ever seen have been between brothers. So I guess it's not too much of a surprise that Gil and Dave don't get along.
Yeah, but even when brothers don't get along, they'll usually close ranks against outsiders who cause trouble for their family.
Usually, but not always.
The Texans stepped up onto the boardwalk in front of Harding's office and went inside. The marshal was behind his desk. Tendrils of steam rose from the coffee cup in front of him. He picked it up, gave Bo and Scratch a nod of greeting, and took a sip.
More coffee in the pot on the stove if you'd like a cup.
No thanks. Prisoners give you any trouble during the night?
Well, Dave didn't. He mostly slept, I think. Hitchens and Rawley kept bitching until I had to threaten them with a bucket again, and then they settled down too. Ain't heard a peep out of any of them so far this morning.
Harding set the cup down and stood up. He took a ring of keys from a nail in the wall and unlocked the cell block door.
Hey! When do we get something to eat?
I don't recall saying anything about feeding you.
That ain't fair! You can't lock us up and then starve us!
Don't worry. You'll be out before you starve. If you get a little hungry between now and then, it won't kill you. On your feet, Dave.
Inside the cell, Dave Sutherland was sitting on the bunk, holding his hat in one hand and raking the fingers of the other through his tousled brown hair. He winced every time someone spoke, a sure sign of a wicked hangover.
Ugh. Could you tone it down a mite, Marshal?
Head hurting, huh? You're lucky that's all that hurts. You idiots could have plugged each other. Worse, you could have ventilated some innocent bystander with those stray bullets. I talked to Ed Sharkey last night. It's going to cost him $2 to get that bullet hole patched in his wall, and he claims those two bottles of whiskey that got broken were full and worth $1 apiece. I'm not sure he's telling the truth about that, so all I'm going to collect from you in a way of damages is $1, Dave. Pony it up.
Dave found a dollar coin in his pocket and slapped it into Harding's outstretched palm as he shuffled out of the cell.
Hey, we're next!
Nope. Your release papers ain't been processed yet. It'll still be a while before you get out of here.
Release papers? You didn't have no release papers for Sutherland.
You might as well sit down and shut up. You'll get out of here when I'm good and ready to let you out, not before.
You're gonna be sorry for treating us like this, Marshal. You won't get away with it. Mr. Rutledge will see to that.
If Jared Rutledge has a problem with the way I do my job, he can take it up with the town council. I work for them.
Well, maybe that's just what he'll do.
Harding left the cell block.
Ugh.
Again, Dave winced in pain. Ever so carefully, he settled his hat on his head. Harding hung the keys back on the ring and then opened a drawer in the desk. He took out a revolver and handed it to Dave. Harding fished some bullets out of the drawer and handed them to Dave as well.
Here you go. It's unloaded. You'd be smart to leave it that way for a while. Less chance of getting yourself killed that way.
Defiantly, Dave thumbed the cartridges back into the Colt cylinder before he holstered the weapon.
Am I free to go?
Yeah. Creel and Morton came by to make sure you get back to your ma's place all right.
I don't need no damn nursemaids, especially not a couple of ancient ones.
Now listen here. I don't want any more trouble between you and Rutledge's bunch. You go with Creel and Morton and stay away from Sharky's. Steer clear of Rutledge's freight yard, too.
You can't tell me what to do as long as I'm not breaking the law, Marshal.
Maybe not. But I could turn you over my knee and give you a paddling, boy, if you want to act like a spoiled little brat.
Nobody talks to me like that.
Take it easy, kid. Why don't you show some sense for a change? You may not realize it, but we're on your side.
The hell you say? You work for my mother.
That ought to be pretty much the same thing.
Ought to be doesn't mean it is.
See you later, Marshal.
Dave stalked stiff-legged down the street, clearly still angry. Bo and Scratch followed. For a second, it appeared that Dave was going to stop at Sharky's, which was open despite the early hour. But then he wiped the back of his hand across his mouth and went on.
He was thinking about a little hair of the dog what bit him.
Yeah, but he decided against it. Maybe that's a good sign.
Abigail and Ponderosa were on the front porch of the Stage Line headquarters, watching Bo and Scratch approach with Dave. Abigail couldn't stand it and came down the steps to greet her son. Dave didn't pull away when she hugged him.
Are you all right?
I'm fine. I just spent a night in jail, that's all. And I'm hung over.
Come on inside. There's some breakfast left.
I'm not very hungry, Ma, but I could use a cup of coffee.
Yeah, how'd that talk you were gonna have with the boy go?
We never really got a chance to talk to him.
Marshal Harden had a few choice words for him, though. Didn't seem to take.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. You see, Dave's at the age when he don't want to listen to anybody. Especially somebody who's trying to talk sense to him.
Where's Gil?
Don't know. He left a while ago. Said he had better things to do than hang around here and watch his ma fawn over her no-account son. He's probably down around town somewhere.
Sounds like a mighty bitter young man.
Yeah. He wasn't like that before Will died. Oh, him and Dave didn't get along too well even then, but it was different. Losing his paw hit Gil mighty hard.
I wonder what chores Miss Abigail needs us to do today.
Nothing, far as I know. You fellas got so much accomplished yesterday, you're plumb out of chores for today. Reckon you can just take it easy and rest up for that stage run tomorrow.
coach is scheduled to roll out at 9 o'clock.
You want to handle the team or ride shotgun?
I don't reckon it matters to me.
Well, I'll just take the guard's job then. More fun for me that way if those owl hoots try to jump us again.
The Texans were taking it easy and smoking in the rocking chairs on the front porch a short time later when the sounds of hoofbeats from somewhere out back caught their attention. They stood up and went to the edge of the porch, looking around the corner of the building in time to see a mounted figure riding in the direction of the red sandstone butte that loomed over the settlement.
That looks like Dave riding off.
It is Dave. I wonder where he's going. As far as I know, there's not much in that direction once you get around the butte.
Well, now, I reckon there's one way to find out.
You mean we should follow him?
We don't have anything else to do today, do we?
Nah, I reckon we don't.
And I know how being curious about something just eats away at you.
Let's saddle up and ride.
They managed to get their horses ready to ride without Ponderosa or Abigail seeing what they were doing. That was good, because they didn't want to worry Abigail any more than she already was where Dave was concerned, and Ponderosa would have been inquisitive. The old-timer might even have insisted on going with them. As it was, they were able to swing up into their saddles and send the dun and the bay trotting toward the butte without any delays. Dave was out of sight now, but Bo and Scratch were both experienced trackers. They were confident that they would be able to pick up his sign without much trouble. That proved to be the case. Dave had skirted the butte to the east and then continued to head almost due north. The fresh hoof prints were like signposts to the eyes of Bo and Scratch. The trail mingled briefly with some other tracks that were a day or two old, but it wasn't hard to pick out the ones made by Dave's horse. The Texans hung back and were careful not to skyline themselves, just in case Dave was checking his back trail. They didn't have any real reason to think that might be the case. It was more a matter of habit on their part. When you were following an hombre, it was usually a good idea not to let him know you were behind him.
Where the devil's he headed? There ain't any settlements in this direction, is there?
Nothing this side of Williams. That's got to be at least 40 or 50 miles from here. Anyway, he's starting to veer east now.
Oh, Lord, there's nothing out there.
Nothing but the Badlands.
The gray slopes of the Santa Marias and the green ranching country in the foothills were behind them now as they rode east into a broken, arid wasteland. At the edge of it, they crossed a narrow stream.
That's got to be Hell Creek. We're upstream a good 10 miles from where it crosses the stage road between Chino Valley and Red Butte.
Yeah, the springs that feed it are probably up here somewhere. I've seen streams rise before in canyons like this.
The ground was harder and rockier now, which made it more difficult to follow Dave's trail. He knew where he was going, but Bo and Scratch didn't have that advantage. Still, their keen eyes were able to make out the occasional hoof print, the overturned rock, the bright splash on stone where a horseshoe had nicked it. Little things like that told them they were still on the trail.
You got an idea what the boy's doing up here, don't you, Bo?
I talked to Marshall Harding about Rance Judson's gang. Their hideout is somewhere in these Badlands. The one time that the county sheriff took a posse after them, the trail petered out in here.
You think Dave's trying to hunt down those outlaws?
I think Dave is meeting those outlaws.
What? You're saying that he's one of the gang?
It would explain some things.
Well, like what? Judson's bunch has held up Miss Abigail's stagecoaches in the past. You can't believe that crazy talk of Rutledge's about her being tied up with those owl hoots.
Not Abigail, no. I don't believe she wants anything except to make a success of the stage line that her husband started. But Dave hasn't shown any indication that he gives a damn about the stage line, or about the rest of his family, for that matter.
Yeah, that's true, I reckon. He could be working with Judson. You know, I liked it better when I thought Rutledge and Judson were mixed up together, though.
And that could still be the case, whether Dave is working with the gang or not.
Oh, now that don't make any sense at all. What about that shootout last night between Dave and those two gunnies who worked for Rutledge?
Nobody was hurt, were they? The gunfight could have been staged just for show, to make sure everyone in Red Butte is convinced there's no connection between Dave and Rutledge.
Oh, now you're making my brain start to hurt. Got too many folks conspiring together, Bo. I can't keep them all straight.
I'm just throwing out ideas. Could be that none of them are right. We'll likely know more when we find out exactly where Dave's going.
Yeah.
The trail led through switchback canyons, along dusty arroyos and hogback ridges.
I hope you know your way back out of here, Bo, because I am plumb turned around.
We'll get out. If we're still in here when it gets dark, we can steer by the stars.
Yeah, and fall in a ravine that we don't see until it's too late.
Yeah, there's that chance too.
They spotted another butte in the distance, shorter and broader than the one that towered over the settlement of Red Butte. Something about it drew Bo's interest, and as he realized that Dave's tracks were heading in the general direction of the butte, he pointed toward it.
I think that's where he's headed.
You reckon the gang's hideout is somewhere around that butte?
Formations like that usually have caves in their base, and sometimes tunnels that lead up to the top. A group of well-armed men could stand off a small army from a place like that, as long as they had plenty of food, water, and ammunition.
Yeah, it'd be about as good as a fort, wouldn't it? We can't just waltz up and ask if Dave's there talking to Judson, though.
No, we'll have to be careful approaching it.
A bullet whined between the two riders, missing both of them narrowly. At the moment, they were riding up what appeared to be a blind canyon toward a boulder-littered slope at the far end. Dave Sutherland's tracks led this direction, so Bo and Scratch knew there had to be a way out of the canyon, even though it wasn't apparent yet. They split up and headed for cover as fast as they could. More shots rang out. Sand and gravel spurted from the floor of the canyon around the hooves of the running horses as slugs plowed into the ground. Puffs of powder smoke from the rocks at the far end revealed where the riflemen were hidden. Bo and Scratch reached the walls of the canyon and leapt from their saddles, dragging Winchesters from saddle boots as they did so. Slaps on the rump sent their horses galloping back around a bend in the canyon, putting them out of the line of fire. Bo crouched behind a boulder, while Scratch took cover behind a small shoulder of rock that jutted out from the left-hand wall of the canyon.
You hit?
No. How about you?
Fine as frog hair.
Scratch thrust the barrel of his rifle around the rock and cranked off three rounds as fast as he could pull the trigger and work the lever, then ducked back as the hidden gunman returned his fire. That gave Bo a chance to loose some shots at the bushwhackers. He sent several slugs screaming into the field of boulders that littered the slope at the end of the canyon.
I think I heard somebody yell.
You must have tagged one of them.
I came close enough to make him jump anyway.
Both of the Texans had extra ammunition in their pockets, so they were confident they could put up a good fight, even though they were pinned down here. Eventually, though, their cartridges would run out. An even bigger danger was the possibility that the bushwhackers might send someone circling around to come up the canyon behind them. Then they would be caught in a crossfire, and their chances of getting out of this ambush alive would be reduced to almost nothing. They couldn't afford to wait for that to happen.
You reckon we should make a run for it?
Bo looked back along the canyon the way they had come. It was a good 30 yards to the bend around which the horses had disappeared. To get there, he and Scratch would have to turn their backs to the would-be killers and sprint for safety, gambling that they could reach the bend before the riflemen brought them down. Bo had taken some mighty big risks at the poker table in the past, but this seemed like a sucker bet.
I don't think we'd stand a chance.
We can't just sit here all day.
Don't I know it?
Bo's eyes searched for any other possible avenue of escape. After a moment, he spotted something intriguing farther down the canyon. A minute's study convinced him that he might be onto something.
I'm gonna keep those varmints busy for a minute. While I'm doing that, take a gander at the rim rock on your side of the canyon, about 50 yards in front of us.
Scratch nodded in understanding. When Bo popped up from behind the boulder a second later and started peppering the rocks where the riflemen were hidden with bullets from his Winchester, Scratch looked around the rock that was giving him cover and gazed at the place Bo had indicated. He saw several large boulders perched rather precariously at the upper edge of the canyon wall. Return fire from the bushwhackers forced Bo to crouch down again, and Scratch pulled back into cover as well.
What? You talking about those boulders up there look like they're about ready to fall?
That's right. There are some smaller rocks right underneath the one in front. It looks to me like if they were dislodged, the rest of the boulders would come down.
A rock slide like that would raise a heap of dust.
And give us enough cover, we can make a run for it. The problem is, the way the canyon wall juts out, I don't think either of us could hit those rocks from where we are.
Well, then this idea of yours ain't gonna do us much good, is it?
But you might be able to draw a bead on him if you climb part of the way up the canyon wall.
I ain't a blasted mountain goat!
No, but I see a few footholds and toeholds you could use. I'm not saying it'd be easy.
Well, that's good, because you dang near need to be a human fly to go up that wall.
But I don't see any other way out for us. I'd give it a try myself, but I don't have any cover over here except on the ground. That shoulder of rock you're behind goes all the way up to the canyon wall.
God, my mama didn't raise no damn billy goat. Look at that. How the hell am I supposed to hold on to that? I'm crazy just thinking about it. Oh, hell.
Finally, Scratch leaned his Winchester against the rocks and dropped his Stetson beside it.
All right, blast it, but if I fall off of this dang rock, it's your fault, Bo Creel.
Good luck.
I'm gonna need it.
Scratch studied the rock wall for a moment longer, then reached up and grabbed a small place where he could get a good hold. He wedged a boot tip in a little notch and pulled himself up. Bo continued exchanging shots with the hidden gunman, while Scratch began the slow, laborious climb. Bo wanted to keep the bushwhackers distracted so that maybe they wouldn't notice that Scratch wasn't shooting anymore. Once Scratch had climbed high enough, he would still face the tricky task of dislodging those smaller rocks supporting the larger ones with shots from his revolver. They were almost out of range of a handgun. Scratch didn't get in a hurry. That could prove to be dangerous when climbing a rock face with no rope or other equipment. He tested each foothold and handhold before he put much weight on it. Slowly, he rose 5 feet, then 10, then 15 and 20. When Scratch was about 30 feet above the canyon floor...
Give it a try now!
If Scratch wasn't high enough yet, their plan would be revealed anyway. But the try had to be made sometime. Scratch made sure both feet and his left hand had secure holds, then reached down with his right hand and drew the ivory-handled Remington from the holster on that side.
Be careful, the recoil doesn't knock you off.
Yeah, that's easy for you to say, mister.
Scratch swung his arm, shoulder, and head around the jutting rock so that he had a clear shot at the target. His eyes locked instantly on the smaller rocks he had to knock loose. Thrusting the revolver toward them and leaning against the canyon wall, he squeezed off 3 shots, pausing briefly after each one to be sure of his aim. The bushwhackers saw him and began firing at him.
Damnation!
Scratch was forced to pull back as bullets whined around his head and smacked into the canyon wall only inches away from him. He didn't have time to see whether or not his shots had had any effect. Bo could see, though, and he let out a whoop as the large boulder in front of the others perched on the rim rock shifted slightly.
You did it, Scratch! You did it!
But then, a second later, the boulder ground to a halt again. It appeared to be as immovable as ever. Bo's spirits fell, and if he had been a man given to cussing, he would have turned the air blue with profanity at that moment. Scratch had holstered his gun, but hadn't started climbing down yet.
Bo! What happened?
Looks like it didn't work.
That was when the boulder gave another sudden lurch and then plummeted from the rim rock, followed by half a dozen more huge rocks it had been supporting. The boulders slid down the side of the canyon, taking hundreds of smaller rocks with them and creating a large, billowing cloud of dust that filled the canyon from one side to the other. The dust cloud rolled toward Bo and Scratch, but hadn't reached them yet as Bo ran out from behind the rocks where he had taken cover, and Scratch began climbing down the canyon wall. Even though it was more dangerous to do so, Scratch moved faster now, knowing that the time he and Bo had to make their getaway was limited. He swung from handhold to handhold, feeling like a dang monkey as he did so. Bo heard shots whining through the dust, but knew that the bushwhackers were firing blind now. He and Scratch just had to trust to luck that none of those wild bullets would hit them. Their chances were better this way than any other he had been able to think of. Running in a crouch, Bo crossed the canyon and reached the spot where Scratch had left his rifle and hat. Bo had barely grabbed them up when Scratch thudded to the ground beside him, having let go and dropped the last few feet. Bo thrust the Winchester and Stetson into Scratch's hands.
You all right?
Whew! That landing rattled these old bones of mine, but I can still run.
He proved it by dashing back down the canyon toward the bend that would protect them from the bushwhacker's shots. Bo was right beside him. Another slug ripped the air between them, but then they reached the bend and careened around it. If the horses had kept going, the Texans might again be in deep trouble, but fortune still smiled on them. The animals had come to a stop only a short distance down the canyon, and despite the crash of gunshots nearby, were cropping contentedly at some of the clumps of sparse grass that grew here and there in the rocky canyon floor. The Texans ran down the canyon to the horses, caught up the reins, and swung into the saddles, sliding the Winchesters into the sheaths as they did so.
Now where?
Back the way we came!
The chance still existed that they might run into some of the bushwhackers' allies, but there was no other way out of there. They followed the twisting canyon until it petered out. Beau and Scratch tried to retrace their trail, but it was difficult. Within a short time, they were turned around in the maze of gullies, canyons, and ridges. But there seemed to be no pursuit, and they didn't run into anybody else who wanted to kill them, so there was that much to be thankful for anyway, even if they were lost. After a while, they reined in and pulled out their bandanas to mop sweat off their faces and the back of their necks. The sun was high overhead, beating down fiercely from its zenith and baking the Badlands in its heat.
You reckon it was some of Judson's gang that took those shots at us?
It's the only thing that really makes any sense. I'm more convinced than ever that their hideout is either on top of that butte we saw, or somewhere around it. That canyon must be the only good way to get there, so Judson posted guards in those rocks to take care of anybody who came along and might discover it.
Yeah, that means they let Dave Sutherland pass, because we didn't hear no shots until they opened up on us.
Yeah. If there was any doubt that Dave is tied in with the gang somehow, it's gone now, at least as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, me too. This is gonna just about kill his ma.
That's why we're not gonna tell her.
Not tell her? Her own son's working with the Owl Hoots who are about to run her stage line out of business. We ain't gonna tell her?
Not until we know for sure what's going on. I'm not saying that we have to give Dave the benefit of the doubt, because that pretty much went away when those gunnies started shooting at us. But I'd still like to hear his side of the story before we say anything to Abigail. In fact, it would be best if Dave himself told her about it.
Yeah, I guess. One problem, though.
What's that?
We gotta get out of this godforsaken wilderness and back to Red Butte first.
We'll find our way out. We've been in worse places than this.
Yeah, maybe. I don't remember them, though.
They started their horses moving again, making their way through the barren breaks. From time to time, they caught a glimpse of the mountains in the distance, so they had a general idea of the direction in which they were going. As the sun moved from its position directly overhead, that helped too. Sometime in the middle of the afternoon, they came to a tiny trickle of water in the bottom of an arroyo and reined in to look at it.
Whew. You reckon that's Hell Creek?
More than likely. But I know one way to be pretty sure.
Bo hunkered down on his heels next to the narrow stream, dipping up some of the water in his hand.
Full of sulfur. That's Hell Creek, all right.
All we have to do is follow it downstream. Sooner or later, it'll take us out of here.
That's right.
Following Hell Creek proved to be easier said than done, because in places, the stream flowed through clefts in the rock that were too narrow for men and horses. Whenever that happened, Bo and Scratch had to circle around and locate the creek again farther downstream. The stream meandered through the rugged terrain, flowing first one direction and then another. But finally, it began veering southwest and then turned almost due south. When it reached that point, the Santa Marias and their foothills were visible again, so Bo and Scratch knew where they were. They could even see in the distance the towering edifice of red sandstone that marked the settlement's location. After crossing Hell Creek, they stopped and turned in their saddles to look back at where they'd been.
You reckon we could ever find that place again?
We can find it. But maybe we won't have to. Maybe once Dave realizes that the jig is up, he'll be willing to lead a posse in there.
Oh, yeah, I'll believe that when I see it.
They hitched their weary horses into a trot that carried them south toward Red Butte. The guards at the bottom of the tunnel waved Dave past, and the ones at the top didn't stop him either. He didn't like the winding passage through the butte. It always spooked him a little, and it would have been even worse without the lanterns placed in niches carved in the stone walls every now and then to provide some light. For some reason, even though he was going up, it always felt to Dave like he was on a downward slope instead. A slope into hell? He pushed that thought out of his mind as he emerged into the brilliant sunlight atop the butte. He reined in for a moment and squinted until his eyes adjusted to the brightness. Then Dave jogged forward again, toward the half-dozen adobe cabins that had been built up there sometime far in the past. Rance Judson and his men hadn't built the Hakales. They'd already been here when the outlaws moved in and adopted this place as their hideout. Dave had no idea who was responsible for them. Some of the old Spaniards who had come up here from Mexico seeking gold, maybe. There was grass and water atop the butte, enough for the gang's horses, but not enough to support any sort of ranch. The outlaws had fixed up the abandoned cabins, which had fallen into a state of disrepair, and built a pole corral for their horses from the ruins of a corral that had been there previously. They added thatched roof portals in front of the cabins so that they could sit in the shade and catch some of the breeze that always blew up here. They'd put up an awning to shade the spring as well, so that the water was fairly cool where it flowed out of the rock, even though it did stink of brimstone and taste like it too. Rance Judson, the boss outlaw, claimed it was the best hideout he'd ever seen, and he had seen plenty. If a posse ever came within rifle range, marksmen on the butte's rim could wipe them out with ease. Judson was waiting under the portal in front of his cabin, sitting in a chair he had rocked back against the adobe wall behind him. A cigarillo that looked like a short length of twisted black rope was between his lips. A jug of whiskey sat on the ground beside him, handy for occasional sips when the urge hit him. His dark brown hat was pushed to the back of his head, revealing waves of thick, greasy black hair. His bushy eyebrows sat on a low-slung ridge of bone above his deep-set eyes, and his prominent nose showed the bends and bumps of having been broken several times in the past and set inexpertly. Ugly was the first word that sprang to mind whenever anyone looked at Rance Judson, and yet his face had a rugged power to it that was strangely compelling. Ugly or not, he never had any trouble attracting women, whenever there were any women around to attract. He hadn't brought any out here into the Badlands, although it would have been simple enough to ride down to Mexico and fetch back some whores. Judson's reasoning was simple enough. Men who got liquored up whenever there were women around always got into fights over those women. So he'd given his men a choice. They could have whiskey, or they could have whores, but not both. The outlaws had voted overwhelmingly for whiskey. Time enough for whores when they were all rich men, spending the rest of their lives south of the border, safe from the law. Lazily, Judson lifted a hand in greeting as Dave reined to a halt in front of the cabin and dismounted.
Young Sutherland, what brings you up here?
I came to talk to you, Rance. You could have killed my brother the other day.
We were shooting high, just as we agreed.
And how did Ponderosa Pine wind up with a bullet through his shoulder?
Accidents happen. Like maybe you accidentally led a couple of hombres up here to the hideout.
I didn't lead anybody out here. I kept a close eye on my back trail, just like always.
Didn't you hear the shooting after you passed through the canyon?
Yeah, but I didn't figure it had anything to do with me.
Two men rode up that canyon about 15 minutes after you did. The guards opened fire on them, but they got away.
Dave tried to keep the worry he felt from showing on his face. He knew that Judson had set up an elaborate signaling system with mirrors so that the guards, posted all around the hideout, could report in any time there was trouble. To an experienced eye, the flashes of light were just as good as electrical signals over a telegraph wire.
Maybe it was just a couple of riders who happened to come that way. They might not have had anything to do with me.
Looked like older gents.
Damn it! Creel and Morton.
That's what I figured, too.
You know about them?
I keep up with what's going on in Red Butte. Who are they?
Just a couple of shiftless saddle tramps. They're the ones who interfered the other day, when you were chasing the stage. And then my mother went and hired them to help out with the stagecoach runs.
I figured as much. They may be old, but they're still gun handy, aren't they?
I don't know.
They followed you out here, and they got away from my men. Pretty slick for a couple of old pelicans, if you ask me.
It won't happen again.
Damn right it won't. You won't be coming out here again.
I'll do whatever you tell me, Rance. But I still want to help. Haven't I tipped you off whenever Rutledge's coach was carrying anything worthwhile?
I've got other sources of information.
Look, we agreed that nobody'd be hurt if I helped you hold up our coaches. You already broke your word when Loach and Jenkins were killed a while back.
Judson uncoiled from the chair like a striking snake. He grabbed the front of Dave's shirt with both hands and hauled the startled young man up on his toes.
You listen to me, you little pissant. There's only so much you can do to control a situation when the bullets start to fly. People get hurt. People get killed. That's part of it. You damn fool. You saw what happened at that bank over in Chino Valley?
Dave had seen, all right, and the thought of it still sickened him. That had been one of the jobs where he had gone along as an actual member of the gang, a masked, gun-wielding outlaw, just like the others. But he didn't kill anybody that day. Hell, he didn't even fire his gun into the air. He had watched in horror, though, as Judson and some of the others had gunned down a couple of innocent men who'd tried to stop them. The killings hadn't been absolutely necessary, but the outlaws hadn't even hesitated.
You're the one who wanted to work with us. When we came to you and asked you if you were willing to help us hold up your ma's stagecoaches, you said yes. You didn't give a damn then, so long as you got your cut. So don't go getting on a high horse now. You're an outlaw just like the rest of us. We get caught, you'll hang just like the rest of us. You understand?
Yeah, sure, Rance. I just don't want anything to happen to my brother.
Should have thought of that before you decided to betray him and your ma.
Judson gave Dave a shove that sent the young man stumbling back against one of the posts that held up the thatched roof of the portal.
Sorry, Rance. I mean it. I'll do whatever you say.
Then stay in Red Butte until we contact you again, and steer clear of Creel and Morton. I don't trust those two old meddlers.
I will, Rance. You can count on that.
Shouldn't matter too much anyway. Your ma's coach is going out again tomorrow, ain't it?
Yeah. First thing in the morning. Creel and Morton are taking the run.
I thought maybe they would be, but I'm glad to hear it. Those two old troublemakers won't be coming back to Red Butte. Not alive, anyway.
It was dusk by the time Bo and Scratch got back to the settlement, with shadows gathering in the streets and lamps being lit in the buildings. They hadn't eaten since breakfast, since they hadn't expected to be gone so long, and hadn't taken any supplies with them.
I'm starving here, Bo. My belly thinks my throat's been cut.
Well, pretty soon you'll be able to reassure your belly that your throat's just fine.
As they brought their horses to a halt in front of the stage line office, Ponderosa Pine stepped out onto the porch.
Now there you fellas are. Miss Abigail and me was thinking we might have to send out a search party to look for you. Where you been all day?
Just taking a look around the countryside. Time sort of got away from us. We didn't realize it would be so late before we got back.
We ain't too late for supper, are we?
Nah, don't worry about that. Miss Abigail would have waited for you anyway, at least for a while.
Are Gil and Dave here?
Gil is. Ain't seen Dave all day. He's probably dead drunk somewhere, or else holed up in some whore's crib.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, supper will be on the table in a minute. Need a hand putting your horses up?
Nah, we can take care of them. We'll wash up and be right in.
Bo and Scratch used the back door when they entered the building this time, which took them in through the kitchen. Abigail Sutherland greeted them with a smile as she stood over the stove, her face flushed a little from the heat. A few tendrils of dark hair had escaped from the bun that was pulled together at the back of her head, and they fell fetchingly around her face.
You boys must be hungry. You've been gone all day.
We're plumb starving, ma'am.
Well, go on in the dining room and sit down. We have stew tonight, and it's almost ready.
Yes, ma'am.
As the Texans came into the dining room, they saw that Gil Sutherland and Ponderosa were already seated at the table. Gil frowned at them.
Where you two been? I was afraid you decided to move on and didn't tell anybody.
Not hardly. We just rode around some, getting familiar with these parts. We're still planning on taking that stage run tomorrow.
Good. You'll have a pretty full mail pouch and three passengers.
Passengers, huh? That's sort of uncommon these days, ain't it?
It's been a while. Thatcher Carson and his wife and little boy are headed over to Cottonwood. Mrs. Carson has a sister who lives there, and she's ailing. Mrs. Carson and the little boys are going to stay for a while, and Thatcher wouldn't let them travel alone. So he'll be coming back on the return trip with you.
Well, he won't get lonely then. What does this fella Carson do?
Keeps the books for Pitchfork Mine. That's the only one of the mines still operating.
He's a pretty good hombre for a fella who comes from back east. A lot of gents in his position would just do their job and then leave when the time comes. But Thatcher, he moved his wife and boy out here and says he's going to make Red Butte their home.
Well, we'll take good care of him and his family.
Abigail brought in the pot of stew and began filling bowls with the savory aromatic concoction. She had cornbread to go with it, too.
Ma'am, this cornbread is so sweet and moist it pert near melts in your mouth.
I'm glad you like it, Scratch. Eat hearty, gentlemen. You'll need your strength for tomorrow. It's a long run to Cottonwood.
Everyone dug in. They were all aware of the empty place that had been set for Dave, but no one mentioned the fact that he wasn't there. Evidently, that was a common enough occurrence that it wasn't remarkable anymore. After the meal was over and everything had been cleaned up, Gil sat in the office with Bo and Scratch and went over all the details of the job that awaited them the next day. As far as the Texans could tell, there was nothing unusual about it, other than the potential threat from Rance Judson's gang of outlaws. There hadn't been any Indian trouble in this part of the territory for several years, and the stage road from Red Butte to Chino Valley and then on to Cottonwood was clearly marked and easy enough to follow.
We've done this sort of work quite a few times in the past, Gil. Don't worry, we can handle it.
Yeah, I'll worry until you get back. Can't help it with all the trouble that's gone on in recent months. I told my mother I'd take the run myself and let one of you be the shotgun guard, but she insisted that I need the rest.
And Miss Abigail's right. Just let us do the worrying for a while.
I'll try. I'm not sure how successful I'm going to be.
When Gil was satisfied that Bo and Scratch knew what they were doing, the Texans bade him and Abigail good night and walked to the barn to get some rest. Ponderosa was already there, sitting on a three-legged stool and awkwardly trying to pack his old briar pipe one-handed.
Here, now, let me give you a hand with that old-timer.
Old-timer, is it? You two ain't no spring chickens your own selves.
And haven't been for quite a while.
Bo pulled up another stool and took out his own pipe. Once Scratch got Ponderosa's pipe going, he rolled a curly for himself, and the three men sat there smoking quietly for a while, surrounded by the night and the smell of the stable and the small noises made by the horses as they shifted around in their stalls.
What'd you two fellas really do all day? That business about riding around and sightseeing was just a line of bull.
I was afraid you'd see through that, Ponderosa. We rode out to the Badlands to see if we could find any sign of Rance Judson's hideout. I talked to Marshal Hardin about it, and he knew that Judson and his bunch hole up out there somewhere.
You find anything?
Just some of the ugliest, driest, hottest country this side of hell. And I don't mean Hell Creek, because we were on the other side of it.
What was you planning on doing if you found the hideout?
Well, there are a lot of rewards out on Judson and his men. That money would be coming to us if we led the sheriff and a posse out there.
Yeah, but did you ever stop to think that if you'd found the hideout, Judson and his varmints might try to kill you? What if you rode right in on them?
I don't reckon we'll ever know. We didn't find the blasted place. We did good just to find our way out of that hell hole.
Damn right. If you got lost in there and died of thirst, wouldn't have been the first time that happened to some hombres unlucky enough or dumb enough to get themselves in that fix. Well, I'm turning in. Morning's gonna come early, so you fellas better get some sleep, too.
We will.
Bo and Scratch had spread their bedrolls up in the loft. Ponderosa had a cot in the tack room. The drifters climbed the ladder, took off their boots and gun belts, and crawled into their sugans. They didn't go to sleep right away, though. And after all these years, they were attuned enough to each other's moods to know that.
I've been thinking.
About what?
You ever consider settling down again?
Not really. Thought crosses my mind now and then, of course. But it never stays around for long after what happened.
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking. When we come into the kitchen tonight, Abigail was standing there at the stove. Well, I don't think I ever saw anything so pretty in all my life, Bo. I got to wondering what it would be like to see such a pretty sight every day for the rest of my life.
I know what you mean. That'd be mighty nice, all right.
Oh, now, dadgummit, you ain't going sweet on her, too, are you? You just said you didn't want to settle down again.
I said the thought crosses my mind from time to time, too.
Yeah, well, I seen her first.
I believe we both saw her at the same time.
I said something first.
You said something to me. You haven't said anything to Abigail about how you feel, have you?
No, but neither have you. And I know you ain't, because we've been together just about all the time since we rode into Red Butte.
Listen, Scratch, I'm not going to fight you over Abigail. For one thing, we've been partners way too long for that. And for another, you saved my life more times than I can count. Besides, settling down would never work out for me. Might be something to dream about every now and then, but that's all. Anyway, it's not like you need my blessing to court Abigail. You're a grown man, she's a grown woman.
Yeah, I reckon what I'm really worried about is if I settle down here and help her run this stage line, what are you going to do?
I expect I'll amble on somewhere else after a while, just like we usually do.
What, by yourself?
I'm a grown man too, Scratch.
Abigail's got that trouble with Judson and one son who's proddy and another who's maybe crooked. You know, there's an old saying about how a fella shouldn't ought to getting mixed up with a woman who's got more problems than he does.
Could be that works the same way from the woman's side.
Yeah, I reckon. It seems fair, don't it?
How in the hell do folks ever get together anyway, what with all the trouble in the world?
Well, they find a way. One way or another, they find a way.